You're listening to The Healthy Sensitive. Hello and welcome everybody to The Healthy Sensitive. I'm Leah Burkhart, health educator, health and wellness coach, certified life coach, and today I'm going to be talking about imposter syndrome. And I want to give a shout out to the person who's, well, accidentally responsible for having inspired this particular topic. So last week I published a podcast, and it was the first one I'd published in a long time. I think it was about a year. Yes, she says bright red and sheepishly with her little tail behind her legs. And the reason had been because I had been spending a lot of time really diving deeply into building out my private practice. So as I mentioned, I'm a health and wellness coach, and I have a practice called The Healthy Sensitive. And I'd also been doing some collaborative projects with a nurse practitioner in the community. I'm really, really excited about all of it. So it's hard for me to be too apologetic because I'm working harder than I think I've ever worked, except that it doesn't feel like work. So basically just feels like I'm either kind of in a flow or like just, you know, that feeling when you get immersed into something that you just can't turn away from. So in my case, that might happen when I'm in the middle of a really good book, or it might happen when I'm engaged in a puzzle. Yes, this is a thing, and super dangerous for someone like me. Put me in front of a puzzle and have an audiobook playing at the same time. Holy moly. I mean, it's a great thing because, I mean, it's heaven, except I'll be up until 3 o'clock in the morning because I'll be thinking, just one more piece. And then I get the piece in, but then meanwhile, the book is playing, like the audio, and I'll think, well, one more chapter. And then again, 3 o'clock in the morning rolls around. Anyway, talk about a tangent. That's how it's been feeling for me in all of the work I've been doing, that kind of experience where I'm just totally immersed in a thing and I just can't pull away. And so I was so busy doing my practice, I didn't feel like I had the time to talk about my practice. So it was good stuff. I don't know if it's a good reason in terms of being valid, but it felt like a really good problem to have. Having said that, though, it was sort of, I kept looking back over at my poor little sweet podcast too that I had neglected. And so finally said, okay, this is ridiculous. I need to just publish. So I did. And in the first one that I published in a long time, I talked about boundaries. And a really wonderful friend of mine had reached out and said, hey, listen to your episode and I have some feedback if you'd like it. Which, first of all, is about the most kind, compassionate, and boundaried way to offer feedback I know of. It was so, Matt, and of course, this is one of those people in my life who I admire deeply. So if any kind of feedback this individual would have given was just gold. So it's like, I tried to put my hand underneath my little, you know, and you're just like, no, yeah, that would be fine. No problem. And what I wanted to say is like, yes, please, with 3 or 4 exclamation points. I might have actually sent her a text message back with 3 exclamation point. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And she mentioned the fact that in the podcast, I had given a shout out to a number of other podcasters that I was really excited about, and a podcaster / author. And it's like, that's great. I know you're excited, but it does, you made it seem like, no, really, you should stop listening to me because these other folks are better. And it was, again, the feedback she was giving was sort of like, hey, you have things to say too, and that's okay, which I thought was lovely. And the little light bulb went off in my head because I was thinking about how many of my clients that I work with, because many of the clients I work with are trying to figure out how to create not just work-life balance. I think lots of people are aiming for some version of that, especially in today's time. But for more sensitive individuals, the challenge is a little bit more nuanced, slightly altered. Maybe I'll just explain it. So what I find to be the true with highly sensitive professionals is that they're trying to lean into their ambitions because they are capable and competent, and they've been told as much, given feedback to that effect, and they kind of know instinctively, I can do more. I want to contribute in a way that's meaningful, and I want to be compensated appropriately for my contributions. And the challenge of that for a more sensitive person is that we live in a world that caters to the other 80% of people. So people who maybe like a slightly higher degree of stimulus in their lives. So what I'll often say about HSPs is, you know, that Elaine Aron put together the DOES acronym, DOES or DOES. I'm not actually entirely certain how she likes to pronounce it, but D is for depth of processing. O is for overarousal, E is for emotional sensitivity, and what I would argue is granularity, and then S is for sensory sensitivity. And so what these individuals seem to have in their favor is an ability to, you know, that deep reflection and deep thinking allows for them to integrate a number of ideas in ways that perhaps the average person might not have seen in the same way. And I want to make sure it's clear, with highly sensitive people, these are not folks that you would identify from the outside. They're ordinary humans. It's not a diagnosis and it's not a superpower. It's a trait. It's a little bit like saying, are you introverted or are you extroverted? Do you have brown eyes or blue eyes? Like, it's a trait. You know, no one would say that someone having blue eyes is a disorder. It's just that with this trait comes some assets and some liabilities, which is true of any trait. Just about. So you're a highly sensitive person. You think more deeply. You're more easily amused, which also means more easily overstimulated. There's an emotional granularity, meaning you can be really specific with your emotional landscape. These are folks that can usually say things like, I feel apathetic, happy, elated, content, tranquil, frustrated, enraged, melancholy, anguish, and so on and so forth. So with a group of people like this, their ability to kind of take in more information and then integrate it more deeply often leads to coming up with creative solutions to problems. They tend to be wonderful leaders and or managers because they're good at kind of knowing, well, this person needs me to push a little. This person needs me to back off. This person actually likes more structure and accountability. This person would see that as micromanaging and can instinctively adjust based on what works best for that individual as a leader. And this is part of why I so love working with those who are highly sensitive professionals, particularly those who might be more ambitious, because I feel like the world benefits from their work. The thing is, their high productivity capacity, just like with anything, has a sort of a cost. So the analogy I've used in many of my episodes is kind of like the smartphone versus the flip phone. And I should be careful because pretty soon here I'm going to be talking to an audience who doesn't remember a flip phone. Anyway, so like with those flip phones, you might remember you could basically just throw them against a wall and they would still function. You could charge them and you'd probably get maybe up to a week's worth of juice out of it before you really, really needed to charge it again. With a smartphone, you don't get that. I mean, so you get way more functionality. You can download apps. You can use the internet. You basically have a mini computer at your disposal anywhere you go. So that's pretty neat. The downside, though, is that you don't get to throw it against a wall and imagine it will function at the same capacity. And you absolutely have to recharge it more frequently. This is important. So for a highly sensitive professional, wherever they may have kind of staked out their claim or their niche in their workspace, they can often get done in 6 hours what it might take another person 8 or 10. But the problem is they're then expected to work at that capacity for 8 to 10 hours, and that's not how that works. They often make phenomenal managers, but then they're promoted into positions where they're expected to work for 40, 60, 80 hours. 40 is probably appropriate, but you know, like I'll give an example. There's a client of mine who is in a leadership role, and yet the leader above her is, I don't know what the appropriate term with this maybe old-fashioned, but coming from a philosophy where if you are in a leadership role, you make sacrifices, which I think might be appropriate. But the kinds of sacrifices this individual's insisting that those in the team, you know, made or make, because it's present day happening, is for each of them to be willing to take calls all throughout the night, be on call for any of these types of questions. There's a very specific challenge that's coming down the pipeline for this in this organization. So it's not like this is expected all the time, but it's because of this particular season in their workforce. And my client was trying to push gently back and say, well, the thing is, this problem we're facing is much more of a marathon than a sprint. And we're not even yet in the hardest part of this problem that we're trying to tackle. So you may exhaust your leaders before it even, but you know, well before you really need them at the highest potential capacity. We need to be much more, we think sustainably about this. We need to put in better systems. And the higher up person basically said, no, we don't. So in my view, having someone who is a more sensitive individual, and therefore, and when I'm using the word sensitive, what I mean is quick to detect and respond to changes in their environment. That's what I mean by sensitive. I don't mean sensitive as in incapable of hardship or necessarily emotionally frail, although sometimes that word is used in contexts to describe those experiences. I really and truly do mean it just as I'm paying attention to my environment, I'm detecting changes on a subtle level, and I'm quickly responding and or adapting to what needs to happen to make sure that I and or the people that I'm responsible for remain safe. So this is part of why sensitive individuals are known as being rather risk averse. Not 100%, but many. So anyway, this is why I am so deeply passionate about helping those who are sensitive, because when they get into positions of authority and or influence, they are able to create systems that are, well, frankly, phenomenal. And the challenge for them, though, is finding a way to balance their ambitions. So I want to lean into what I know it is I'm here to do and can help serve, alongside their need to recharge. They have to figure out how to do some of these high-level jobs differently. And so when I was talking about boundaries last week, part of the inspiration behind that is that often it's the topic that keeps coming up. Like, it's not a question of, can I do the thing? It's a question of, when is it appropriate to say, no, I will not do the thing. Not because I can't, but because I just don't want to, or I don't think it is appropriate. It's just not okay to tell me I have to do that thing. So this is one example of that, was that client I just referred to. You know, how can I, this was her question, you know, how do I develop boundaries that are appropriate and still respect where he, my boss, her boss is coming from? So, well, I don't know. So that's part of what we're tackling. So as I'm relaying this information, I'm kind of going through all of this. What I realized is that many of my clients suffer from what I'm going to call imposter syndrome. There's this, it's not that they're unwilling or unable to assert themselves. It's that they often think, ooh, but I don't know if I deserve it. Or let's say that they want to move themselves into leadership roles so that they can exert more influence. Their concern is, ooh, I don't know if I actually have the qualifications that I require to be able to even make a bid for that position. And I thought it was interesting, because here I was doing the exact same thing. I was kind of revealing my own imposter syndrome. I mean, I'm a podcaster. I'm a creative. I do have my own company. I'm launching a second. I have some skills. Now, I just wanted to say to all of you folks out there, this has been something I've been building for over a decade. So I was by no means a sprinter. I feel like there are some people out there who they know they want to run a company and they just go out there and crush it. And I think that's so cool. That was not my path. Mine has been a nice, slow, steady, paced marathon. And I guess it could be argued this is even some of my imposter syndrome coming out as I'm describing my sort of entrepreneurial pursuits, except I'm not even a little bit embarrassed about it. Every step of the way I've known this is something I want to take my time with. So having said, so I'm like, I've done these things. I'm really excited about the work I'm doing. I'm even more thrilled about the kinds of people I get to work with on a daily basis. And yet I'm seeing in myself, after over a decade of having built this, some kind of, ooh, no, don't look at me, look over there. And some of that's authentic and genuine and appropriate. I think it's great to have a measure of humility, because none of us, like, you know, hey guys, just so you know, none of us actually knows what we're doing. We're all just kind of throwing noodles at the wall and hoping something sticks. So if there's anyone out there thinking, I'd love to have my own practice or coaching practice, you know, private practice as a therapist or whatever, but I don't think I can. You can, trust me. Because if I can, you can. So, but the fact that I've been in here so long and I'm still kind of like, no, look somewhere else. That's really interesting. And that led me to start thinking, well, wait, where else do I see this? And it come to find out, in my private practice with many of my clients. What's that about? Is imposter syndrome just something that happens to everybody? Like, maybe we all have a little bit of it stored up in us. Or is this maybe something that is specific to highly sensitive people? Or maybe is like, there's a higher proportion? Wow, words are hard today. A disproportionate amount of those who with imposter syndrome who seem to be sensitive. Or perhaps another way of putting it, maybe there's a higher percentage of HSPs who have imposter syndrome relative to the general public. So naturally, because I'm a nerd, I went and decided to do some research. So first, before I go into HSPs and all of that, what I do kind of want to break down what is imposter syndrome. So apparently it's also known as imposter phenomenon, which, okay, like, if you ever hear imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon, evidently they are synonymous. But it's a psychological pattern in which an individual doubts their accomplishments, their skills, or their abilities, and has a persistent fear of being exposed as a, quote, fraud, despite evidence of their competence. So another way of thinking about this is that people with imposter syndrome often feel like their achievements are a result of luck or external factors rather than their own capabilities. So you'll hear this a lot if someone says, wow, this was a really great project. And you might say, yeah, well, I mean, you have to remember I'm really, really lucky because X, Y, and Z. And also this other person did A, B, and C. And da, da, da. So there's this downplaying of my role in the success of whatever project I may have contributed to. So individuals experiencing imposter syndrome, they might think they don't deserve their success, that they're not as competent as others perceive them to be. So it leads to this feeling of like inadequacy, self-doubt, anxiety, and there's this constant fear of being like found out as someone who doesn't belong or maybe just isn't as skilled as they seem. So it's like, oh no, someone's gonna figure out that I don't know what I'm doing. So imposter syndrome can affect people from all walks of life. So in my case, I work quite often with, you know, professionals or even aspiring leaders that happen to also be sensitive. But honestly, regardless of their actual achievements or qualifications, it seems to happen to all kinds of folks. And it's commonly observed in high-achieving individuals, you know, professionals, academics, artists, and students. So some factors that might contribute to imposter syndrome might include perfectionism, high expectations, which could be both self-imposed or maybe externally imposed, maybe by a parent, comparison with others, and societal or cultural pressure. And so when thinking about this, apparently, and again, this is all me doing some academic nerdy research, but it manifests in a number of ways. Or maybe another way of thinking of it is there's a number of different types of imposter syndrome. Yeah, there's like different types of imposter syndrome. So one facet or variation is the perfectionist. So this is someone who sets extremely high standards for themselves and feels like any mistake is a sign of failure. There's the expert. So this is someone who believes they need to know everything before they take on a task and fears being exposed for not knowing something. There's the soloist. So this type is like someone who prefers to work alone because they think seeking help would reveal their lack of ability. The natural genius. So someone who thinks their success should come naturally. So any struggle would reveal that this isn't actually my, like, clearly I'm not meant to do this because I'm not naturally brilliant. and or the superhero. So this is someone who feels like they need to excel in every aspect of their life, often at the expense of their own well-being. So when I was looking at this list, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm all of these. Like, so the perfectionist, you know, setting extremely high standards, this is one I've actually gotten much better at. And part of the reason is due to the fact that when I was in graduate school, I did my master's thesis on the triangular, I called the Bermuda Triangle, but so between perfectionism, chronic fatigue / burnout, and depression. And what I mean, naturally, and for many people, research is really me search. And that was definitely true for me. So I've been pretty attuned to perfectionism. And I actually think that's part of why I'm much more comfortable just saying, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm just winging it. I mean, I know what I'm doing as a coach. I feel very competent. Once there is a human in front of me, there's no part of me who's thinking, uh-oh, I don't know how to hold space for you. Hope they don't figure this out. It's like, oh, no, that's fine. But when it comes to promoting myself in that way or saying to another person, I'm really good at this, I'm much more comfortable now saying, putting something out that isn't perfect on a podcast like this one. I'm much more comfortable, you know, kind of trying out things, watching them fail, getting feedback, and then seeing if I can improve on it. So I'm starting to fall in love with the process. But that perfectionism sort of string is still alive in me. It's something I have to negotiate with, and it's something I've gotten better at, but it's still present. The expert, so this idea that you need to know everything before taking on a task, oh my God. So a great example of this is social media. I have not gone on social media for well over a year. I'm pretty sure it's been longer than that. I think it might be more like 2 or 3. And frankly, some of it's good reason. I just wasn't finding it to be terribly helpful in building my business. Not because I don't think it is in general, but because whatever it was I was doing wasn't working, and it was taking so much bandwidth to continue engaging in it that I thought, oh, fooey with it. I'll just go and meet humans. So then I was doing things more like going to networking events, joining BNI or the chamber, and just getting out in front of like live Homo sapiens. And that was working much better. And then some of that too is through referral base and so on. So all of it was good. It's just that now I'm starting to do more research on, okay, well, how could I, now that I have a better understanding, I have much more confidence in my skill set, I'm much more able to describe what it is I do, who it is I serve, how it is I help them. And I feel like now I might be able to leverage social media in a way that feels authentic and is beneficial to myself and anyone who might stumble upon my content. Well, then how do I get started? So I kid you not, people, I still have not put up a post in Instagram because I keep thinking, okay, well, first I need to understand the mechanics of what reels include. Yes, I know many of you are rolling your eyes and that's appropriate, but here I am, folks. I have no idea how to do a reel. I'm just gonna own it. Like, in what social media outlet should I use? Like, TikTok, I still have not even opened the damn thing because it's like, no more. Like, I'm such an old fogey that TikTok is new to me. I mean, not new as in I didn't know about it, but new as in, oh, I haven't even got a profile. I don't wanna. Don't make me. So I've gotten to this place where it's like, well, I better be more of an expert and understand the full enchilada, all the picture, before I just launch something. But that's not how that should work. People don't actually need perfection. They just want authenticity. So that's a classic example of how this is manifesting for me. The soloist, I have part of the reason that it's taken me well over 10 years to build my private practice and move it from neat hobby to almost side hustle to part-time job to, no, this is my primary way that I make a living. Like, this is, in my workspace, the primary identity or hat that I wear, with a part-time job that I have on the side that helps support it. The part-time job is not my job. That's the thing that supports the real thing I'm doing. For the reason it took me 10 years to get to that place, I would say at least a big part of it is that I have been the soloist. It's like, nope, I will figure it out myself. I did not really start getting momentum until I went out there and started saying, I need help. I need help. I want, and or that I wanted to collaborate with other people. So the joy I get from the project I'm doing with Dani Dupuy, who's, you know, private practitioner, she's a nurse practitioner in the community, Phoenix Rising, you should absolutely go and check her out if you haven't already. That, like, I would, like, together we've built Ashvatori, and I could go into more detail about that, but for now I will just say that as a result of our collaborative efforts and as a result of some of the community members that I've met by way of the Chamber of Commerce, through my networking and so on, my work is just flourishing because I'm starting to connect with people and say, I'm not an expert at all the things. Can you maybe help me? And it's like, whoa, you mean I don't have to do all of it? I can recruit support for this? This is awesome. So yeah, the soloist, that's definitely a thing I've noticed. It's only by virtue of having let that go, and I'm still clinging on to it, but I'm starting to finally relinquish a smidge of it. And the more I let go of that, the more my work flourishes. The next one, the natural genius. So the person who thinks their success should come naturally and any struggle or need for effort indicates incompetence. I have less of that now, but when I started as a private practitioner, I will say that I had a lot of this. It was the sense of, well, no, I'm not an entrepreneur because look at, I'm not good at it. Other people are good at it. It did not, I mean, I think intellectually I understood that it was something I'd have to learn, but emotionally, I think I was coming from this place of, well, if you're an entrepreneur and you're making a lot of money, it's because you're good at it. You're naturally gifted. It's not that you've fallen on your face 50 times and then continued to get up because you wanted to make it. It's like, oh, okay. So the natural genius thing, that's not real. Okay, cool. And then the final one, the superhero. This, like, I need to excel in every aspect of life. Every aspect of life, even if it's at my own expense. So this is, I have to be a really good entrepreneur, and I have to be good at my finances, and I have to be really good with my friends and family, and I have to be good at this, and this, and this, and this, and I have to be good at marketing, and I have to be good. And it's like, no, you don't need to thrive, or excel rather, in every aspect of life. It's okay to be good at a few things and mediocre at some others, as long as it's allowing you to have a wholehearted life. So overcoming imposter syndrome usually involves acknowledging feelings, challenging negative self-perceptions, you know, setting realistic expectations, learning to internalize your accomplishments, you know, really starting to lean into the fact that, yeah, I'm not perfect and I am really good at some things. I have something to contribute. It involves seeking support from friends, family, mentors, or maybe mental health professionals that can help you manage some of these feelings that come up, because they can be so subtle. And so, like, it can saturate so many aspects of what it is we try and do. In a perfect example, being in a podcast where I'm trying to share information and I'm getting in my own way by telling people to go elsewhere. I think it's great that the people I love, I will celebrate them all day long. It's actually part of why I became a coach. I often said, so I don't know if any of you have seen Amadeus, I think it was called Amadeus. Yeah, it was Amadeus, and it was about Mozart. And I don't know how much of it was just Hollywood zhuzhing it up and how much of it was real. But the story is about Salieri, a composer who is just, he admires Mozart's music as though it must be the voice of God speaking through, you know, composition and notes. But when he actually meets Mozart, he's this kid who's petulant and wild and has no real deep appreciation for this gift he's been given. And so Salieri is just like, oh my God. And many people around Salieri don't actually appreciate Mozart yet. So Salieri is just gifted enough to see what Mozart brings, but not quite gifted enough to be a Mozart. And so I'll often jokingly say I'm a bit of a Salieri of leadership, or of, you know, it's part of why I love being a coach. I'm really good at being the person who's rubbing the shoulders of the champion, because I am exceptional at identifying exceptional people. It's a gift, I'm telling you. Like, when I see someone who has magic emanating from their pores. I'll be looking around the room and just be like, do y'all see this? Because I see it. And it's part of why I became a coach. It's like, I don't want to be that person. That's not who I am. I want to be the person who supports that person. Because what I started to observe is that these extraordinary people were getting burned out through their efforts. Like they were getting, like all of their gifts were just getting zapped out of them from the world around them. And there was no opportunity for them to take a breath. And because they were trying to behave in the world the way others expected them to behave and to be at their very high level of productivity for as long as the average person works. So like you can get done in 10 hours, you can get done in 6 hours, what it takes someone else 10. Great. Please do that for 10 hours. And it's like, no, that's not how that works. That is not how that works at all. And so that was why I wanted to support these individuals. It's like, no, we need you. And I'm not that person, but I want to support that person. It's like being able to identify all of the, imagine being someone who knew what Steve Jobs was before even Steve Jobs really knew, or even some like these really incredible, you know, people. I'm thinking even Martin Luther King Jr. And I wish I could remember the name of the man who evidently was a very close friend. And so Martin Luther King Jr. would go out and say, I have a dream. And he would paint this sort of abstract, but deeply meaningful picture of what it is we all really ultimately want. And then he had this comrade behind him who would say, okay, good job, Martin. Like, yeah, get out of my way. All right, folks. So this is what implementing that dream is going to look like. Y'all aren't going to be riding the bus for a while. Like, he would talk logistics. So I'm sort of that person who's the behind, like, what do they call it? The person behind the guru or the behind, like I can see what they have to offer. I can rub their shoulders. I can hand them a water and then I can get in and be like, all right, so how are we going to take your vision and make it come alive? That's what I'm good at. So I thought though that I had to be, you know, the superhero who can do all the things. And it's like, no. I don't have to do all the things. I can be comfortable with my expertise. And I also need to be willing and able to say, this is what I'm good at. So part of what happened last week in the episode is authentic. I'm really good at celebrating other people. But part of it was imposter syndrome. And I think this is when it gets the most dangerous. It's when it's not entirely clear. It's easy when whatever it is you're doing is obviously bad. That's, well, I mean, not easy, but simple. If I'm never putting up a boundary and it's clearly making for problems, that's simple. I need to draw a boundary. But what about those times when humility, which is truly a good thing, becomes a bad thing because it's imbalanced? What happens when, if your superpower is seeing other people's superpower and you want to celebrate that, but then suddenly in the midst of all of that, you additionally say, by the way, I'm not even all that good at what it is I do. And it's like, well, wait. No, I am. I'm very good at this. I'm really good at seeing other people's goodness. That's a worthwhile gift to share. So anyway, I'm just giving myself as an example. I'm seeing this in many of my clients. And so I was wondering if this was an HSP thing, if this was just my small slice of reality thing. Wasn't sure. So I start looking into it. And sure enough, I see blog article after blog article. And I start looking into, you know, kind of the research on this. And it turns out highly sensitive people might, in fact, be more prone to experiencing imposter syndrome than the general public. And some of what leads to that is, in terms of kind of their traits, well, first off, they have a heightened self-awareness. So highly sensitive individuals tend to be more introspective and self-aware. Not always. I'm not trying to say HSP is like, we're just so self-aware. Like some of us are oblivious as F. But this can be very valuable for those who do have that self-awareness. It's just that it can also lead to overthinking and overanalyzing their actions and might contribute, that may, by extension, contribute to feelings of inadequacy and doubt. So let me think of an example. So I love this line. I think I've shared it more times than I can count, but it's Elizabeth Gilbert from Eat, Pray, Love. And she says, I know that the unexamined life is not worth living, but could I maybe have an unexamined lunch? This is what I'm talking about. So we are very good at self-awareness, at introspection, But on the negative side of that, we can go so deeply introspectively into ourselves that it makes us more prone to overthink and overanalyze and leads to that sense of doubt. Another element, so remember DOES, so intense emotions, this is the E. So highly sensitive individuals often experience emotions more intensely than others. And I've done a more of a deep dive into the realm of emotions. So remember, emotions don't technically exist in the sense that there's a fingerprint in everyone's brain for sadness. But they do exist in so much as we all have sensations. And those sensations, when they are a collective, are things that we try and capture with a word. And that word is a concept that we make up. So my stomach is clenched. My heart rate is increasing. And a love interest walked in the door. Oh, I'm infatuated. I'm excited. My stomach is clenched. My heart rate is increasing. I'm sweating. And I have to give a speech to 500 people. Oh, I'm nervous. So context can shift. Like, it's all the same sensations, but context can help shift the way we frame our experience. So highly sensitive people have a more vigilant nervous system. What that means is we're going to be more likely to pick up on any number of sensations in our system. And so any stimulus in our environment is going to have a slightly bigger impact on our nervous system, because it's sort of like we are more attuned, or like we're naturally wired to take in slightly more information and process it slightly longer than the average person. And this is part of why if we feel sensations that many of us have started calling emotions, we feel them more quote unquote deeply. It's not that we're more emotionally empathetic. Many of us are, but that's not necessarily the case. I don't want to make it out to be like, to be an HSP inherently means that you're a better person or better at connecting. It's more that you are inherently wired to pick up on the nuances of your internal landscape, which includes your emotional landscape. So if you have more intense emotions, what that's going to lead to is a stronger response to perceived failures or mistakes, which can magnify the fear of being exposed as a fraud or magnify your imposter syndrome. Perfectionism is another. So highly sensitive people do have there's a higher proportion of us that are perfectionistic. Some of that is because of our attention to detail. So if you're more sensitive, you're going to pick up on more details, which means you'll be more attuned to trying to correct potential problems because you're just seeing some of those problems more quickly. So that can lead to high achievement, but if it's sort of manifest into perfectionism, that helps set the path for unreasonable or unrealistic standards for ourselves. And that makes it difficult to accept anything less than flawless performance, which is what then links back to imposter syndrome. Comparison. So highly sensitive individuals tend to be really attuned to how they compare to others, which makes sense. If there's only 20% of you, it's common that you'd then look at the other 80% and start asking some questions like, what's wrong with me? How come 8 out of 10 people at this slumber party seem to be having a hoot of a time? And I'm one of the two weirdos who's just wanting to, ticking down the minutes before I can go home. So that comparison can make it even more destructive. So like if you're more attuned to how you compare to others, you'll take the feedback more to heart. So this can even include constructive criticism. So it might even be that the criticism that was given. So in my friend's case, when she gave me feedback, it was constructive criticism. I was rejoicing. So I will say there was none of that that came up in terms of imposter syndrome. But what can happen is that instead, when I get that feedback, I could go into a spin of, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. Maybe I need to go back and re-record that episode where I don't have all of that shenanigan, like that gobbledygook where I'm leading people to other things. And it's like, heck no, let's keep that bad boy in there. Because now if you're hearing this episode and you haven't heard last week's episode, you can go back to it and be like, dang, she was not kidding. Like she tells me to stop listening to her podcast. What is with this woman? Dude. So it can be helpful in that sense. So for me, what I will say I've gotten very comfortable with is feedback. Some of that is because I've been in this, like, you know, in terms of the entrepreneurial pursuit for over a decade. And so I'm constantly getting feedback. And so it doesn't hurt. Now it's like, I'm hungry for it. Like, please tell me what I'm doing wrong. Please tell me what I'm doing wrong. I need to fix it. So it doesn't hurt. Nevertheless, that doesn't necessarily reduce my imposter syndrome. So this now leads to empathy and empathetic distress. So empathy is a common trait in HSPs. I've mentioned that already, but they might easily pick up on others' emotions and then might internalize the negative feedback or the negative emotions that other people are feeling. So it may be that if I am going out there and I do something wrong, and that wrongness, like me making a mistake, leads, like, especially as a coach, if I'm coaching another person and something I do upsets that individual, I've caused them distress. That's going to cause me distress because my degree of empathy is high enough that I feel their feels, and now I'm distressed about their distress, which makes it, and then around we go. Which then kind of, that moves in seamlessly into the fear of rejection. You know, highly sensitive people often seek harmony and we try and avoid conflict. Conflict avoidance. So it's a fear of disappointing other people. That's where it comes from most of the time. We don't want to be rejected. And it can contribute to imposter syndrome because we're so afraid of that rejection. So it's almost like, oh, no, I can't do that thing. I'm not good at it. So I just won't even bother trying. Because if I try and then I get rejected, that's an extra degree of vulnerability. And then final one is deep reflection. So highly sensitive people tend to deeply reflect on their experiences and actions. And while this introspection can be insightful, it can also lead to ruminating over perceived mistakes and inadequacies. So, oh joy for us. So all of this is to say, like, and you know, even in this last week, because of course now my brain is attuned to this and I'm kind of picking up on it anywhere I go. If I detect a little bit of imposter syndrome, I zero in on it. And especially as someone who's trying to build up a project, a business of her own in a collaborative effort, that means I'm going to be kind of going out, meeting people, trying to connect and network. And almost every single one of them, when you sit down long enough, will talk about their challenges, their trials, their tribulations. And they will say, like, God, it's just so hard to do blank. And most of the time, the blank that's so hard to do has something to do with self-promotion. I really struggle with social media. There's one gal I was talking to just yesterday. She just put out her own, it's a cupcake business, and it is darling. I mean, it's just, and she's attempting to make them relatively healthy, like have healthy options. So it's not just sweet cupcakes, but she also has savory cakes, like an egg bake with avocado frosting. Like, it's just such cool ideas. And she said, yeah, it's so bizarre. I've helped other people launch their businesses for years. And I'm constantly saying to them, like, oh, here, I'll help you with your social media. I'll do this. I can do that. Like, anytime I'm working for someone else, I don't mind. I'll post anything. But I have been really just scared to post something of my own because now it's not on behalf of someone else. It's mine. And I can just, I heard her say it. And I said, have you thought about doing a social media post on that? On just saying, hey guys, this is my first post and it's going to be a little bit messy, but this, like, I'm a little bit scared to do it because this is mine. Like, you could even post on that. And she laughed and said, that's a perfect idea. I should definitely do that. Oh, you're so good at this. And I'm laughing and it's like, well, I might be good at it. I don't really know. But honestly, I think it's more that I needed to hear this from you. I think there are lots of people who would love to start their own businesses or their own practice or something, anything. And they're scared because they just don't think that they have the skills. They're only seeing the Instagram filtered versions of whatever it is other people are posting. And I think there's a lot of value in a person who says, yep, don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to go for it because, guys, I just launched my business and these cupcakes are delicious and you should totally come. Because if she doesn't, I won't know about her. And if she even says, like, yep, I'm really scared, this is really hard for me, but I'm still doing it anyway, that subtly gives me permission to put out a less than perfect post or, you know, social media marketing tool or whatever. It gives me permission to try stuff because it's like, well, I don't know if anyone's going to like it, but shoot, let's just go for it. So all of this is to say, if you can relate to any of this, if you yourself find that there's something you really, really, really want to do, but you're just kind of sort of maybe a little bit, no, a lot terrified because you're thinking, I don't know. I don't think that's me. I don't think I could do that. I'm different. Or yeah, I know that person and that person was able to do it. And I know I have a skill set that's similar to them. So theoretically I could do it too, but they are different. They're special. They have something I don't. And it's like, no, they probably don't. And the world, you know, that's why my favorite line, and I use it all the time, is not don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. And this actually kind of follows suit into the line. It's, oh God, what was the name? So I'm thinking about Coach Carter, and he quoted, oh shoot, I want to say it was Marianne Williamson, but now I can't remember if that turned out not to be true. But the quote was, we do not fear, like, it, we don't fear our smallness, we fear our greatness. You know, it's sort of this idea that, yeah, I might even look it up. Yeah, that's right. I didn't look this up beforehand, and you're going to be along for the ride while I look this up. We do not fear, like, what we fear. Maybe we fear our greatness. Our deepest fear. That's what it was. Yeah. So it was Coach Carter that that revivified this in my mind. I actually don't remember where I heard this quote initially, but Coach Carter is kind of over. There's several scenes where there's one particular student, or I should say player, who's kind of more, you know, given him more of a hassle. And he, the coach, is like, what is our deepest fear? What is your deepest fear? Tell me. And you, even me in the audience, I'm like, what does this have to do? Like, what? And then one scene, the student has figured out that the coach was pointing to something, and it was about our deepest fear. And it said, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others, which I think is lovely. So Marianne Williamson, A Return to Love, Reflections on the Principles of, quote, A Course in Miracles. So when I think of imposter syndrome, this, I think, is a really lovely antidote. The remembering that it's not our deepest fear isn't actually that we're inadequate. It's that we are actually powerful beyond measure. And in my mind, imposter syndrome is the manifestation of this fear. Like, ooh, I don't want to admit that I'm powerful beyond measure. That's terrifying. I'd rather be small and anonymous. I'd rather shrink back into the background. Sort of like, again, what I did last week. Like, ooh, no, I don't want to come out here and be like, hey, folks, I'm the star of my own show here. I want to divert attention, because who am I to say anything? What could I possibly have to say? And the reality is, we all have something to say. This is why you can have a gazillion podcasts on finances, and every one of them at the end of the day is more or less saying the same thing, but they're all saying it a little bit differently. That's why you can have a gazillion health coaches, all more or less saying the same stuff about how to, like, cultivate holistic health and well-being, But they're all saying it a tiny bit differently, and they're all coming to the table with slightly different challenges that got them to where they are, such that they could share their truth. And so if this is true, then imposter syndrome doesn't serve any of us. We are served best when we come alive. And what gets in the way of coming alive? The fear of being amazing, which is a bizarre fear, but we all seem to have it. And in particular, HSPs do, because my God, if you're an extraordinary human and people see it, that's exposure, man. That's wild exposure. Woo. So if you have any experiences of imposter syndrome yourself, or maybe let's say that you kind of sort of maybe have been thinking about a thing that you really, really want to do, but you're like, eek, I don't know if I actually can, and you want to share your experience or maybe share a question, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me, Leah, L-E-A-H, at thehealthysensitive.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts or your questions. I'd even be happy to share answers to them or kind of unpack it in another podcast episode. So yeah, I hope this was helpful for you, because this was such a useful exercise for me. Anyway, so yeah, this was very selfish. I'm really excited about it. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I look forward to our next meeting. Bye for now.